He handed her a scabbard, dark leather worked with a pattern of silver stars. You can't walk up and down the street with an unsheathed weapon, he added. I mean, you can, but it's likely to get us some odd looks. Clary took the sheath, covered the blade, and tucked it through her belt, closing her coat over it. Better? He brushed a strand of red hair back from her face. It's your first real weapon, one that belongs to you. The Morgenstern name isn't cursed, Clary. It's a glorious old Shadowhunter name that goes back hundreds of years. The Morning Star. The Morning Star isn't a star, Clary said grumpily. It's a planet. I learned that in astronomy class. Mundane education is regrettably prosaic, said Jace. Look, he said and pointed up. Clary looked, but not at the sky. She looked at him, at the sun on his light hair, the curve of his mouth when he smiled. Long before anyone knew about planets, they knew there were bright rips in the fabric of the night, the stars. And they knew there was one that rose in the east at sunrise, and they called it the Morning Star, the Lightbringer, the Herald of Dawn. Is that so bad? To bring light to the world? Impulsively, Clary leaned up and kissed his cheek. Okay, fine, she said. So that was more poetic than astronomy class. He dropped his hand and smiled at her. Good, he said. We're going to do something else poetic now. Come on, I want to show you something.
Cold fingers against Simon's temples woke him up. Open your eyes, Daylighter, said an impatient voice. We do not have all day. Simon sat up with such alacrity that the person opposite him jerked back with a hiss. Simon stared. He was still surrounded by the bars of Maureen's cage, still inside the rotting room in the Hotel du Mort. Across from him was Raphael. He wore a buttoned white shirt and jeans, the glint of gold visible at his throat. Still, Simon had only ever seen him look neat and pressed, as if he were going to a business meeting. Now his dark hair was mussed, his white shirt ripped and stained with dirt. Good morning, Daylighter, Raphael said. What are you doing here? Simon snapped. He felt filthy and sick and angry, and he was still wearing a puffy shirt. Is it actually morning? You were asleep, now you are awake. It's morning. Raphael seemed obscenely cheerful. As for what I am doing here, I am here for you, of course. Simon leaned back against the bars of the cage. What do you mean? And how did you get in here anyway? Raphael looked at him pityingly. The cage unlocks from the outside. It was easy enough for me to get in. So, is this just loneliness and a desire for bro-type companionship, or what? Simon inquired. The last time I saw you, you asked me to be your bodyguard. And when I said no, you strongly implied that if I ever lost the Mark of Cain, you would kill me. Raphael smiled at him. So is this the killing part? Simon asked. I have to say, it's not that subtle. You'll probably get caught. Yes, Raphael mused. Maureen would be very unhappy at your demise. I once broached the mere topic of selling you to unscrupulous warlocks, and she was not amused. It was unfortunate. With its healing powers, Daylighter blood brings a high price. He sighed. It would have been quite an opportunity. Alas, Maureen is too foolish to see things from my point of view. She would rather keep you here, dressed up like a doll. But then, she is insane. Are you supposed to say that sort of thing about your vampire queen? There was a time I wanted you dead, Daylighter, Raphael replied conversationally, as if he were telling Simon that there had once been a time when he'd considered buying Simon a box of chocolates. But I have a greater enemy. You and I. We are on the same side. The bars of the cage were pressing uncomfortably into Simon's back. He shifted. Maureen, he guessed. You always wanted to be the vampire leader, and now she's taken your place. Raphael curled his lip in a snarl. You think this is only a power play? He said. You did not understand. Before Maureen was turned, she was terrified and tortured to the point of madness. When she rose, she clawed her way free of her coffin. There was no one to teach her, no one to give her first blood, like I did for you. Simon stared. He remembered the graveyard suddenly, coming up out of the earth into the cold of the air and the dirt, and the hunger, tearing hunger, and Raphael tossing him a bag full of blood. He had never thought of it as a favor or a service, but he would have torn into any living creature he had encountered if he hadn't had that first meal. He almost had torn into Clary. It was Raphael who had stopped that from happening. It was Raphael who had carried Simon from the Du Mort to the Institute, had laid him, bleeding, down on the front steps when they could go no farther, and had explained to Simon's friends what had happened. Simon supposed Raphael could have tried to hide it, could have lied to the Nephilim, but he had confessed and taken the consequences. Raphael had never been particularly nice to Simon, but in his own way, he had a strange sort of honor. "I made you," Raphael said. "My blood, in your veins, made you a vampire." "You've always said I was a terrible vampire," Simon pointed out. "I do not expect your gratitude," Raphael said. "You have never wanted to be what you are." "Neither did Maureen, one can guess. She was made insane by her turning, and she is still insane. She murders without a thought. She does not consider the dangers of exposing us to the human world by too careless a slaughter. She does not think that perhaps if vampires killed without need or consideration, one day there would be no more food." "Humans," corrected Simon. "There would be no more humans." "You are a terrible vampire," Raphael said. "But in this we are aligned. You desire to protect humans. I desire to protect vampires. Our goal is one and the same."
"So kill her," said Simon. "Kill Maureen and take over the clan."
"I cannot." Raphael looked grim. "The other children of the clan love her. They do not see the long road, the darkness on the horizon. They see only having the freedom to kill and consume at will. Not to bend to the accords, not to follow an outside law. She has given them all the freedom in the world, and they will end themselves with it." His tone was bitter.
"You actually care what happens to the clan," Simon said, surprised. "You would make a pretty good leader."
Raphael glared at him. "Though I don't know how you'd look in a bone tiara," Simon added. "Look, I understand what you're saying, but how can I help you? In case you didn't notice, I'm trapped in a cage. If you free me, you'll get caught. And if I leave, Maureen will find me."
"Not in Alicante, she will not," said Raphael.
"Alicante?" Simon stared. "You mean capital of Idris, Alicante."
"You are not very smart," Raphael said.
"Yes, that is the Alicante I mean." At Simon's stunned expression, he smiled thinly. "There is a vampire representative to the council, Anselm Nightshade. A retiring sort, the leader of the Los Angeles clan, but a man who knows certain friends of mine, warlocks."
"Magnus?" said Simon in surprise.
Raphael and Magnus were both immortals, both residents of New York and fairly high-ranking representatives of their downworlder branches. And yet he had never really considered how they might know each other, or how well. Raphael ignored Simon's question.
"Nightshade has agreed to send me as the representative in his place, though Maureen does not know it. So I shall go to Alicante and sit on the council for their great meeting, but I require you to come with me."
"Why?"
"They do not trust me, the Shadow Hunters," said Raphael simply.
"But they trust you, especially the New York Nephilim. Look at you. You wear Isabel Lightwood's necklace. They know you are more like another Shadow Hunter than you are like the Night's Children. They will believe what you say if you tell them that Maureen has broken the accords and must be stopped."
"Right," Simon said. "They trust me."
Raphael looked at him with wide, guileless eyes. "And this has nothing to do with your not wanting the clan to find out you turned Maureen in, because they like her, and then they turn on you like weasels."
"You know the children of the Inquisitor," he said. "You can testify directly to him."
"Sure," Simon said. "No one in the clan will care that I ratted on their queen and got her killed. I'm sure my life will be fantastic when I get back."
Raphael shrugged. I do have supporters here, he said. Someone had to let me into this room. Once Maureen is taken care of, it is likely we can return to New York with few negative consequences. Few negative consequences, Simon snorted. You're a comfort. You are in danger anyway here, said Raphael. If you did not have your werewolf protector or your shadow hunters, you would have met eternal death many times over. If you do not wish to come with me to Alicante, I will be happy to leave you here in this cage, and you may be Maureen's plaything. Or you can join your friends in the Glass City. Katerina Loss is waiting downstairs to make a portal for us. It is your choice. Raphael was leaning back, one leg bent, his hand dangling loosely over his knee, as if he were relaxing in the park. Behind him, through the bars of the cage, Simon could see the outline of another vampire standing by the door, a dark-haired girl, her features in shadow. The one who had let Raphael in, he guessed. He thought of Jordan, your werewolf protector. But this clash of clans and loyalties, and above all Maureen's murderous desire for blood and death, was too much to lay at Jordan's door. Not much of a choice, is it? Simon said. Raphael smiled. No, Dayliner, not much at all.
The last time Clary had been in the Hall of Accords, it had nearly been destroyed. Its crystal roof shattered, its marble floor cracked, its central fountain dry. She had to admit the Shadow Hunters had done an impressive job of patching it up since then. The roof was back in one piece, the marble floor clean and smooth and veined with gold. The arches soared overhead, the light that shone down through the roof illuminating the runes carved into them. The central fountain with its mermaid statue glimmered under the late afternoon sunlight, which turned the water to bronze. When you get your first real weapon, it's traditional to come here and bless the blade in the fountain waters, said Jace. Shadow Hunters have been doing it for generations. He moved forward under the dull gold light to the fountain's edge. Clary remembered dreaming of dancing with him here. He looked back over his shoulder and gestured for her to join him. Come here. Clary moved up to stand beside him. The central statue in the fountain, the mermaid, had scales made of overlapping bronze and copper gone green with verdigris. The mermaid held a pitcher, from which water poured, and her face was set in a warrior's grin. Put the blade in the fountain and repeat after me, said Jace. Let the waters of this fountain wash this blade clean. Consecrate it to my use alone. Let me use it only in the aid of just causes. Let me wield it in righteousness. Let it guide me to be a worthy warrior of Idris, and let it protect me that I may return to this fountain to bless its metal anew. In Raziel's name. Clary slipped the blade into the water and repeated the words after him. The water rippled and shimmered around the sword, and she was reminded of another fountain in another place, and Sebastian sitting behind her looking at the distorted image of her own face. You have a dark heart in you, Valentine's daughter. Good, Jay said. She felt his hand on her wrist. The water of the fountain splashed up, making his skin cool and wet where it touched hers. He drew back her hand with the sword in it, and released her so that she could lift the blade up. The sun was even farther down now, but there was enough of it to strike sparks off the obsidian stars along the central ridge. Now give the sword its name. Heos Forus, she said, sliding it back into its scabbard and tucking the scabbard into her belt. The Dawnbringer. He huffed out a laugh and bent to feather a kiss against the corner of her mouth. I should get you home, he straightened up. You've been thinking about him, she said. You might have to be more specific, Jay said, though she suspected he knew what she meant. Sebastian, she said. I mean, more than usual. And something's bothering you. What is it? What isn't? He started to walk away from her, across the marble floor towards the great double doors of the hall which were propped open. She followed him, stepped out onto the wide ledge above the staircase that led down to Angel Square. The sky was darkening to cobalt, the color of sea glass. Don't, Clary said. Don't shut yourself off. I wasn't going to, he exhaled harshly. It just isn't anything new. Yeah, I think about him. I think about him all the time. I wish I didn't. I can't explain it, not to anyone but you, because you were there. It was like I was him, and now, when you tell me things like that he left that box in Armitage's house, I know exactly why, and I hate that I know it. Jace, don't tell me I'm not like him, he said. I am, raised by the same father. We both have the benefits of Valentine's special education. We speak the same languages. We learned the same style of fighting. We were taught the same morals, had the same pets. It changed, of course. It all changed when I turned 10, but the foundations of your childhood, they stay with you. Sometimes I wonder if all of this is my fault. That jolted Clary. You can't be serious. Nothing you did when you were with Sebastian was your choice. I liked it, he said, and there was a rough undercurrent to his voice, as if the fact rasped at him like sandpaper. He's brilliant, Sebastian, but there are holes in his thinking, places where he doesn't know. I helped him with that. We would sit there and we would talk about how to burn the world down, and it was exciting. I wanted it. Wipe it all clean, start again, a holocaust of fire and blood, and afterward a shining city on a hill. He made you think you wanted those things, Clary said, but her voice shook slightly. You have a dark heart in you, Valentine's daughter. He made you give him what he wanted. I liked giving it, said Jace. Why do you think I could so easily think of ways to break and destroy, but I now can't think of any way to fix it? I mean, what does that qualify me for exactly? A job in Hell's Army? I could be a general like Asmodeus or Samael. Jace, they were the brightest servants of God once, Jace said. That's what happens when you fall. Everything that was bright about you becomes dark. As brilliant as you once were, that's how evil you become. It's a long way to fall. You haven't fallen. Not yet, he said. And then the sky exploded in spangles of red and gold. For a dizzy moment, Clary remembered the fireworks that had painted the sky the night they had celebrated in Angel Square. Now she stepped back, trying to get a better view. But this was no celebration. As her eyes adjusted to the brightness, she saw that the light was the demon towers. Each had lit like a torch, burning red and gold against the sky. Jace had gone white. The battle lights, he said. We have to get to the guard. He reached for her hand and began to tug her down the stairs. Clary protested. But my mother, Isabel, Alec. They'll all be on their way to the guard too. They had reached the foot of the steps. Angel Square was filling with people flinging open the doors of their houses, emptying into the streets, all of them running toward the lighted path that ran up the side of the hill and to the guard at the top. That's what the red and gold signal means. Get to the guard. That's what they'll expect us to do. He ducked away from a shadow hunter who was running past them while strapping on an arm guard. What's going on? Jay shouted after him. Why the alarm? There's been another attack. An older man in worn gear shouted back over his shoulder. Another institute? Clary called. They were back at a shop-lined street she remembered visiting with Luke before. They were running uphill, but she didn't feel breathless. Silently, she thanked the past few months of training. The man with the arm guard turned around and jogged uphill backward. We don't know yet. The attack's ongoing. He spun back around and redoubled his speed, dashing up the curving street towards the bottom of the guard path. Clary concentrated on not crashing into anyone in the crowd. They were a moving, jostling flood of people. She kept her hand in Jace's as they ran, her new sword tapping against the outside of her leg as she went, as if to remind her it was there, there and ready to be used. The path that led up to the guard was steep, packed dirt. Clary tried to run carefully. She was wearing boots and jeans, her gear jacket zipped over the top, but it wasn't quite as good as being all in gear. A pebble had worked its way into her left boot somehow and was stabbing into the pad of her foot by the time they reached the front gate of the guard and slowed, staring. The gates were thrown open. Within them was a wide courtyard, grassy in the summers, though it was bare now, surrounded by the interior walls of the guard. Against one wall was a massive swirling square of whirling air and emptiness. A portal. Within it, Clary thought she could glimpse hints of black and green and burning white, even a patch of sky dotted with stars. Robert Lightwood loomed up in front of them, blocking their way. Jace nearly crashed into him and let go of Clary's hand, righting himself. The wind from the portal was cold and powerful, blowing through the fabric of Clary's gear jacket, lifting her hair. What's going on? Jace demanded tersely. Is this about the London attack? I thought that was rebuffed. Robert shook his head, his expression grim. Seems that Sebastian, having been foiled in London, has turned his attention elsewhere. Where? Clary began. The Adamant Citadel is besieged. It was Gia Penhallow's voice, rising over the shouts of the crowd. She had moved to stand by the portal. The swirl of air within and without it made her cloak flap open like the wings of a great black bird. We go to the aid of the Iron Sisters, shadow hunters who are armed and ready. Please report to me. The courtyard was full of Nephilim, though not as many as Clary had thought at first. It had seemed like a flood as they'd bolted up the hill to the guard, but she saw now that it was more like a group of 40 to 50 warriors. Some were in gear, some in street clothes. Not all were armed. Nephilim in the service of the guard were darting back and forth to the open door of the armory, adding weapons to a pile of swords, seraph blades, axes, and maces heaped by the side of the portal. Let us go through, Jace said to Robert. All in gear and wrapped in the grey of the Inquisitor, Robert Lightwood reminded Clary of the hard, rocky side of a cliff, craggy and unmovable. Robert shook his head. There's no need, he said. Sebastian has attempted a sneak attack. He has only 20 or 30 Endarkened warriors with him. There are enough warriors for the job without us sending our children through. I am not a child, Jay said savagely. Clary wondered what Robert thought when he looked at the boy he had adopted. If Robert saw Jace's father in Jace's face, or still searched for remnants of Michael Wayland that weren't there. Jace scanned Robert Lightwood's expression, suspicion darkening his gold eyes. What are you doing? There's something you don't want me to know. Robert's face set into hard lines. At that moment, a blonde woman in gear brushed by Clary, speaking excitedly to her companion. Told us that we can try to capture the Endarkened and bring them back here. See if they can be cured, which means maybe they can save Jason. Clary looked daggers at Robert. You're not letting people whose relatives were taken in the attacks go through. You're not telling them the Endarkened can be saved. Robert gave her a grim look. We don't know that they can't be. We know, Clary said. They can't be saved. They're not who they were. They're not human. But when these soldiers see the faces of people they know, they'll hesitate. They'll want it to not be true. And they'll be slaughtered, Jace said bleakly. Robert, you have to stop this. Robert was shaking his head. This is the will of the Clave. This is what they want to see done. Then why even send them through? Jace demanded. Why not just stay here and stab 50 of our own people to death, save the time? Don't you dare joke, Robert snapped. I wasn't joking. And don't tell me 50 Nephilim can't defeat 20 Endarkened warriors. Shadow hunters were beginning to go through the portal, guided by Gia. Clary felt a tickle of panic run down her spine. Gia was letting through only those who were completely outfitted in gear. But quite a few were very young or very old, and many had come unarmed and were simply seizing up weapons from the pile provided by the armory before passing through. Sebastian's expecting exactly this response, Jace said desperately. If he's come with only 20 warriors, then there's a reason, and he'll have backup. He can't have backup, Robert's voice rose. You cannot open a portal to the Adamant Citadel unless the Iron Sisters allow it. They're allowing us, but Sebastian must have come overland. Sebastian didn't expect us to be watching for him at the Citadel. He knows we know he can't be tracked. He doubtless thought we were watching only institutes. This is a gift. Sebastian doesn't give gifts, Jay shouted. You're being blind. We are not blind, Robert roared. You may be frightened of him, Jace, but he is just a boy. He is not the most brilliant military mind ever to exist. He fought you at the Burren, and he lost. Robert turned and wheeled away, striding towards Gia. Jace looked as if he had been slapped. Clary doubted anyone had ever accused him of being frightened before. He turned to her. The movement of shadow hunters toward the portal had slowed. Gia was waving people away. Jace touched the short sword at Clary's hip. I'm going through, he said. They won't let you, Clary said. They don't need to let me. Under the red and gold lights of the towers, Jace's face looked as if it had been cut out of marble. Behind him, Clary could see more shadow hunters coming up the hill. They were chatting among themselves as if this were any ordinary fight, any situation that could be handled by sending 50 or so Nephilim to the place of attack. They hadn't been at the Burren. They hadn't seen. They didn't know. Clary met Jace's eyes with hers. She could see the lines of tension on his face, deepening the angles of his cheekbones, setting his jaw. "The question is," he said, "is there any chance you'd agree to stay here?" "You know there's not," she said. He took a shuddering breath. "Right. Clary, this could be dangerous, really dangerous." She could hear people murmuring around them, excited voices rising against the night on puffs of exhaled air. People chattering that the consul and council had been meeting to discuss the London attack just as Sebastian popped into sudden existence on the tracking map. That he had only been there a short time and with few reinforcements. That they had a real chance to stop him. That he had been foiled in London and would be again. "I love you," she said, "but don't try to stop me." Jace reached to take her hand. "All right," he said. "Then we run together, toward the portal." "We run," she agreed, and they did. 7. Clash by Night. The volcanic plains spread out like a pale moonscape before Jace, reaching to a line of distant mountains black against the horizon. White snow dusted the ground, thick in some places, crisp, thin ice in others. Deadly sharp rocks sliced through the ice and snow, along with the bare branches of hedges and frozen moss. The moon was behind clouds, the velvet dark sky pricked here and there with stars, dulled by a sheen of cloud. Light blazed up all around them, though, from seraph blades. And, Jace saw as his eyes adjusted, light from what looked like a bonfire burning in the distance. The portal had deposited Jace and Clary a few feet from each other in the snow. They were side by side now, Clary very silent, her coppery hair dusted with white flakes. All around them were cries and shouts, the sound of seraph blades being ignited, the murmur of the names of angels. "Stay close to me," Jace murmured as he and Clary neared the top of the ridge. He had caught up a longsword from the pile by the portal just before leaping in, Gia's cry of dismay following them through the shrieking winds. Jace had half expected her or Robert to follow them through, but instead, the portal had closed up immediately after them, like a door slamming shut. The unfamiliar blade was heavy in Jace's hand. He preferred to use his left arm, but the sword had a right-handed grip. The weapon was dented around the sides, as if it had seen quite a few battles. He wished he had one of his own weapons in his hand. It appeared all at once, rising up in front of them like a fish breaking the surface of water with a sudden silver glint. Jace had seen the adamant citadel before, only in pictures. Carved out of the same stuff as seraph blades, the citadel glowed against the night sky like a star. It was what Jace had mistaken for the light of a bonfire. A circular wall of adamas ringed it, with no opening in the wall except a single gate formed by two huge blades, plunged into the ground at angles, like an open pair of scissors. All around the citadel, the volcanic ground stretched away, black and white like a chessboard, half volcanic rock and half snow. Jace felt the hairs rise on the back of his neck. It was like being at the Burren again, though he remembered that only the way one might remember a dream. Sebastian's dark Nephilim, in their red gear, and the Nephilim of the Clave in black, blade to blade, the sparks of battle rising into the night, and then the fire of Glorious wiping out all that had gone before. The earth of the Burren had been dark, but now Sebastian's warriors stood out like drops of blood against the white ground. They were waiting. Red under the light of the stars, their dark blades in their hands. They stood between the Nephilim who had come through the portal and the gates of the adamant citadel. Though the Undarkened were at a distance, and though Jace could not see any of their faces clearly, he could somehow feel them smiling. And he could feel, too, the unease in the Nephilim around him, the shadow hunters who had come through the portal so confident, so ready for battle. They stood and looked down at the Undarkened, and Jace could feel the hesitation in their bravado. At last, too late, they felt it. The alienness. The difference of the Undarkened. These were not shadow hunters who had temporarily strayed from the path. They were not shadow hunters at all. "Where is he?" Clary whispered. Her breath was white in the cold. "Where's Sebastian?" Jace shook his head. Many of the red-geared shadow hunters had their hoods up and their faces were invisible. Sebastian could have been any one of them. And the Iron Sisters. Clary searched the plain with her gaze. The only white was snow. There was no sign of the sisters in their robes, familiar from many codex illustrations. They'll stay inside the Citadel, Jay said. They have to protect what's inside it, the arsenal. Presumably that's what Sebastian's here for, the weapons. The sisters will have surrounded the interior armory with their bodies. If he manages to get through the gates or his Indarkandu, the sisters will destroy the Citadel before they let him have it. His voice was grim. But if Sebastian knows that, if he knows what the sisters will do, Clary began. A scream cut the night like a knife. Jace started forward before realizing the scream was coming from behind them. Jace whirled to see a man in worn gear go down with the blade of a dark shadow hunter in his chest. It was the man who had called out to Clary and Alicante before they had reached the guard. The dark shadow hunter whirled, grinning. There was a cry from the Nephilim, and the blonde woman Clary had heard speaking excitedly at the guard stepped forward. Jason! She cried, and Clary realized she was speaking to the Indarkand warrior. A thick-set man with the same blonde hair she had. Jason, please! Her voice trembled as she moved forward, stretching out her hand to the Indarkand, who drew another blade from his belt, looking at her expectantly. Please, no, Clary said. Don't go near him. But the blonde woman was only a step away from the Dark Shadow Hunter. Jason, she whispered, you're my brother. You're one of us, a Nephilim. You don't have to do this. Sebastian can't force you, please. She looked around, desperate. Come with us. They're working on a cure. We'll fix you. Jason laughed. His blade flashed out, a sideways slash. The blonde shadow hunter's head fell, blood fanned out, black against the white snow, as her body slumped to the ground. Someone was screaming over and over hysterically, and then someone else cried out and gestured wildly behind them. Jace looked up and saw a line of Indarkand advancing from behind. From the direction of the closed portal. Their blades flashed out in the moonlight. The Nephilim began to stumble down the ridge, but it was no longer an orderly progression. There was panic among them. Jace could feel it, like the taste of blood on the wind. Hammer and anvil, he shouted, hoping they would understand. He seized Clary with his free hand and yanked her back away from the headless body on the ground. It's a trap, he shouted at her over the noise of the fighting. Get to a wall, somewhere you can make a portal. Get us out of here. Her green eyes widened. He wanted to grab her, kiss her, cling onto her, protect her, but the fighter in him knew he had brought her into this life. Encouraged her. Trained her. When he saw the understanding in her eyes, he nodded and let her go. Clary pulled away from his grip, sliding past an Indarkand warrior who was facing off against a staff-wielding silent brother in bloody parchment robes. Her boots skidded on the snow as she darted towards the Citadel. The crowd swallowed her up just as an Indarkand warrior drew his weapon free and lunged for Jace. Like all Indarkand shadow hunters, his motions were blindingly swift, almost feral. As he rose up with his blade, he seemed to blot out the moon. And Jace's blood rose up too, shooting like fire through his veins as his awareness narrowed. There was nothing else in this world, only this moment, only the weapon in his hand. He leaped towards the Dark Shadow Hunter, his sword outstretched. Clary bent to retrieve Hyrsphorus from where it had fallen in the snow. The blade was smeared with blood, the blood of a Dark Shadow Hunter who was even now darting away from her, flinging himself back into the battle churning on the plain. It had happened now a half dozen times. Clary would attack, attempt to engage one of the Indarkand in a fight, and they would drop their weapons, back away, turn from her as if she were a ghost, and hurry away. The first time or two she had wondered if they were afraid of Hyrsphorus, confused by a blade that looked so much like Sebastian's. She suspected something else now. Sebastian had probably told them not to touch her or hurt her, and they were obeying. It made her want to scream. She knew she could fling herself after them when they ran, end them with a blade to the back or slice to the throat, but she couldn't bring herself to do it. They still looked like Nephilim, human enough. Their blood ran red onto the snow. It still felt like cowardice to attack someone who could not attack back. Ice crunched behind her and she spun, her blade out. Everything happened in a rush. The realization that there were twice as many Indarkand as they had counted on. That they were besieged on two sides. Jace's plea to her to make a portal. She was fighting her way through a desperate crowd now. Some shadow hunters had scattered, and some had planted themselves where they were, determined to fight. As a mass, they were being slowly pushed down the hill towards the plain, where the battle was at its thickest. Bright seraph blades flashing out against dark knives, a mix of black and white and red. For the first time, Clary had cause to bless her small size. She was able to dart through the crowd, her gaze catching on a desperate tableau of fighting. There, a Nephilim barely older than she was waged a desperate battle against one of the Indarkened, twice the Shadowhunter's size, who forced her down into the blood-slicked snow. A blade swung out, and then a shriek, and a seraph blade darkened forever. A dark-haired young man in black Shadowhunter gear stood over the body of a dead warrior in red. He held a bloody sword in one hand, and tears were running down his face, unchecked. Nearby, a silent brother, a sight unexpected but welcome, in his parchment robes, crushed the skull of a dark Shadowhunter with one blow from his wooden staff. The Andarkand crumpled in silence. A man fell to his knees, wrapping his arms around the legs of a woman in red gear. She looked at him dispassionately, then drove her sword down between his shoulder blades. None of the warriors moved to stop her. Clary burst out on the other side of the crowd and found herself beside the citadel. Its walls were shining with an intense light. Through the arch of the scissor gate, she thought she could see the glow of something red-gold like fire. She scrabbled for the steely at her belt, took hold of it, put the tip to the wall, and froze. Only feet from her, a dark Shadowhunter had slipped away from the battle and towards the citadel gates. He carried a mace and flail under his arm. With a grinning glance back at the battle, he ducked through the citadel gate. And the scissors closed. There was no scream, but the sickening crunch of bone and gristle was audible even through the noise of battle. A gout of blood sprayed across the closed gate, and Clary realized it was not the first. There were other stains fanned across the citadel wall, darkening the ground beneath. She turned away, her stomach clenching, and pressed her steely harder against the stone. She began to force her mind to thoughts of Alicante, trying to visualize the grassy space before the guard, trying to push away the distractions all around her. "Drop the steely, Valentine's daughter," said a cold, even voice. She froze. Behind her stood Armitis, sword in hand, the sharp tip pointing directly at Clary. There was a feral grin on her face. "That's right," she said. "Drop the steely to the ground and come with me. I know someone who'll be very pleased to see you." "Move, Clarissa." Armitis jabbed Clary in the side with the tip of her sword, not hard enough to cut through her jacket, but enough to make Clary uncomfortable. Clary had dropped her steely. It lay feet away in the filthy snow, shining with a tantalizing glimmer. "Stop dawdling." "You can't hurt me," Clary said. "Sebastian's given orders." "Orders not to kill you," Amatis agreed. "He never said anything about hurting you." "I'll happily turn you over to him with all your fingers missing, girl. Don't think I won't." Clary glared before turning around and letting Amatis herd her towards the battle. Her gaze was darting among the Indarkand, looking for a familiar fair head in the Sea of Scarlet. She needed to know how much time she had before Amatis threw her down at Sebastian's feet, and the chance to fight or run was over. Armitis had taken Hears for us, of course, and the Morgenstern blade now dangled at the older woman's hip, the stars along the ridge winking in the dim light. "I bet you don't even know where he is," Clary said. Armitis jabbed her again, and Clary lurched forward, almost stumbling over the dead body of a dark Shadowhunter. The ground was a churned-up mass of snow and dirt and blood. "I am Sebastian's first lieutenant. I always know where he is. That is why I am the one he trusts to bring you to him."
"He doesn't trust you. He doesn't care about you or anything. Look."
They had reached the bump of a small ridge. Clary slowed to a stop and swept her arm out, indicating a battlefield.
"Look how many of you are falling. Sebastian just wants cannon fodder. Just wants to use you up."
"Is that what you see?" "I see dead Nephilim."
Clary could see Amatis out the corner of her eye. Her grey-brown hair floated on the cold air, and her eyes were hard.
"You think the clave is not overmatched? Look. Look there."
She jabbed with a finger, and Clary looked, unwillingly. The two halves of Sebastian's army had closed in and were encircling the Nephilim in their midst. Many of the Nephilim were fighting with skill and viciousness.
They were, in their own way, lovely to watch in battle. The light of their seraph blades traced patterns on the dark sky, not that it changed the fact that they were doomed.
They did what they always do when there's an attack outside Idris and a conclave is not near. They sent through the portal whoever arrived at the guard first. Some of these warriors have never fought in a real battle before. Some of them have fought in too many. None of them are prepared to kill an enemy that bears the faces of their sons, lovers, friends, parabatai. She spat the last word. The Clave does not understand our Sebastian or his forces, and they will be dead before they do.
Where did they come from? Clary demanded. The Undarkened. The Clave said there were only 20 of them, and there was no way for Sebastian to hide their numbers. How? Amatis threw her head back and laughed.
As if I'd tell you. Sebastian has allies in more places than you know, little one.
Amatis. Clary tried to keep her voice steady. You're one of us. Nephilim. You're Luke's sister.
He's a downworlder and no brother of mine. He should have killed himself when Valentine told him to.
You don't mean that. You were happy to see him when we came to your house. I know you were. This time, the jab of the blade's tip between her shoulder blades was more than uncomfortable. It hurt.
I was trapped then, Amatis said, thinking I needed the approval of the Clave and the Council. The Nephilim took everything from me.
She turned to glare at the Citadel.
The Iron Sisters took my mother. Then an Iron Sister presided over my divorce. They cut my marriage marks in two, and I cried with the pain of it. They have no hearts in them, only Adamus. And the Silent Brothers, too. You think they are kind, that the Nephilim are kind because they are good, but goodness is not kindness, and there is nothing crueler than virtue.
But we can choose, Clary said. But how could you explain to someone who didn't understand that their choices had been taken away, that there was such a thing as free will?
Oh, for hell's sake, be quiet, Amatis broke off, stiffening.
Clary followed her gaze. For a moment, she couldn't see what the other woman was staring at. She saw the chaos of fighting, blood in the snow, the spark of starlight on blades, and the harsh glow of the Citadel. Then she realized that the battle seemed to be resolving itself into an odd sort of pattern. Something was cutting a path through the middle of the crowd, like a ship slicing through water, leaving chaos in its wake. A slender, black-clad shadow hunter with bright hair, moving so fast it was like watching fire spring from ridge to ridge in a forest, catching everything ablaze. Only in this case, the forest was Sebastian's army, and darkened, falling one by one. Falling so quickly they barely had time to reach for their weapons, much less raise them. And as they fell, others began to fall back, confused and uncertain, so that Clary could see the space that was being cleared in the middle of the battle, and who stood in the center of it. Despite everything, she smiled. Jace. Amatis sucked in a breath of surprise. It was a moment's distraction, but it was all Clary needed to swing forward and hook her leg around Amatis's ankles, the way Jace had taught her. And then she swept Amatis's feet out from under her. Amatis fell, her sword skittering out of her hand across the frozen ground. Amatis was bending to spring back up when Clary tackled her, not gracefully but effectively, knocking her back into the snow. Amatis hit out at her, snapping Clary's head back, but Clary's hand was at the older woman's belt, snatching Heosphorus free and then jamming the razor-sharp tip against Amatis's throat. Amatis froze.
That's right, Clary said. Don't even think about moving.
Let me go, Isabel screamed at her father. Let me go. When the demon towers had gone red and gold with the warning to get to the guard, she and Alec had scrambled to seize their gear and their weapons and hurtle up the hill. Isabel's heart pounded, not from the exertion, but from excitement. Alec was grim and practical, as always, but Isabel's whip was singing to her. Maybe this might be it. A real battle. Maybe this might be the time they face Sebastian again on the field, and this time, she would kill him. For her brother. For Max. Alec and Isabel had been unprepared for the crush of people in the guard courtyard, or the speed with which Nephilim were being ushered through the portal. Isabel had lost her brother in the crowd, but had pushed towards the portal. She had seen Jace and Clary there, about to step through, and she'd redoubled her speed. until suddenly two hands had come out of the crowd and seized hold of her arms. Her father. Isabel kicked against him and yelled for Alec, but Jace and Clary were already gone, into the portal whirlpool. Snarling, Isabel fought, but her father had height and build and years of training on her. He had let her go just as the portal gave one last whirl and slammed closed, disappearing into the blank wall of the armory. The remaining Nephilim in the courtyard went quiet, waiting for instructions. Gia Penhallow announced that enough of them had gone through to the Citadel, that the others should wait inside the guard in case reinforcements were needed. There was no need to stand in the courtyard and freeze. She understood how badly everyone wanted to fight, but plenty of warriors had been dispatched to the Citadel, and Alicante still required a force to guard it. "See," said Robert Lightwood, gesturing at his daughter in exasperation as she whirled to face him. She was pleased to see that there were bleeding scratches on his wrists where she'd clawed at him. "You're needed here, Isabel." "Shut up," she hissed at him through her teeth. "Shut up, you lying bastard." Astonishment wiped his expression blank. Isabel knew from Simon and Clary that a certain amount of shouting at one's parents was expected in mundane culture, but Shadowhunters believed in respect for elders and a governance of one's emotions. Only Isabel didn't feel like governing her emotions. Not right now. "Isabel." It was Alex, skidding into place beside her. The crowd around was thinning, and she was distantly aware that many of the Nephilim had already gone inside the guard. The ones who were left were looking away awkwardly. Other people's family fights were not Shadowhunter business. "Isabel, let's go back to the house." Alec reached for her hand. She jerked it out of his with an irritated movement. Isabel loved her brother, but never had she more wanted to punch him in the head. "No," she said. "Jason Clary went through. We should get to go with them." Robert Lightwood looked weary. "They weren't meant to go," he said. "They did it against strict orders. It doesn't mean you should follow." "They knew what they were doing," Isabel snapped. "You need more Shadowhunters facing Sebastian, not less." "Isabel, I don't have time for this," said Robert, looking exasperatedly at Alec, as if he expected his son to side with him. "There are only 20 in Darkin there with Sebastian. We sent 50 warriors through." 20 of them is like 100 Shadowhunters," said Alec in his quiet voice. "Our side could be slaughtered." "If anything happens to Jason Clary, it'll be your fault," Isabel said, "just like Max." Robert Lightwood recoiled. "Isabel!" Her mother's voice cut through the sudden, terrible silence. Isabel whipped her head around and saw that Maris had come up behind them. She, like Alec, looked stunned. A small, distant part of Isabel felt guilty and sick, but the part of her that seemed to have taken the reins, that was bubbling up inside her like a volcano, felt only a bitter triumph. She was tired of pretending everything was all right. "Alec's right," Maris went on. "Let's go back to the house." "No," Isabel said. "Didn't you hear the consul? We're needed here at the guard. They might want reinforcements." "They'll want adults, not children," said Maris. "If you're not going to go back, then apologize to your father. Max is..." "What happened to Max was no one's fault but Valentine's. And maybe if you hadn't been on Valentine's side once, there wouldn't have been a mortal war," Isabel hissed at her mother. Then she rounded on her father. "I'm tired of pretending I don't know what I know. I know you cheated on Mum." Isabel couldn't stop the words now. They kept coming like a flood. She saw Maris go white. Alec opened his mouth to protest. Robert looked as if she had hit him. "Before Max was born, I know, she told me, with some woman who died in the mortal war, and you were going to leave too, leave all of us, and you only stayed because Max was born. And I bet you're glad he's dead, aren't you, because now you don't have to stay." "Isabel," Alec began in horror. Robert turned to Maris. "You told her? By the angel, Maris, when?" "You mean it's true?" Alec's voice shook with revulsion. Robert turned to him. "Alexander, please." But Alec had turned his back. The courtyard was almost entirely empty of Nephilim now. Isabel could see Gia standing in the distance near the entrance to the armory, waiting for the last of them to come inside. She saw Alec go over to Gia, heard the sound of him arguing with her. Isabel's parents were both looking at her as if their worlds were toppling over. She had never thought of herself as being able to destroy her parents' world before. She had expected her father to shout at her, not to stand there in his inquisitor's grey looking wrecked. Finally, he cleared his throat.
Isabel, he said hoarsely, whatever else you think, you must believe...
You can't really think when we lost Max that I...
Don't talk to me, Isabel said, stumbling away from both of them, her heart thudding brokenly in her chest.
Just don't talk to me.
She turned and fled.
Jace hurtled through the air, collided with a dark shadow hunter, and rode the Indarkened One's body down to earth, dispatching him with a vicious, scissoring blow. Somehow he had acquired a second blade, he wasn't sure where. Everything was blood and fire singing in his head. Jace had fought before, many times. He knew the chill of battle as it descended. The world around him slowing to a whisper, every movement he made precise and exact. Some part of his mind was able to push away the blood and pain and stink of it behind a wall of clear ice. But this wasn't ice. This was fire. The burn that coursed through his veins drove him on, sped his movements so that he felt as if he were flying. He kicked the headless corpse of the Dark Shadow Hunter into the path of another, a red-clad figure flying toward him. She stumbled and he sliced her neatly in half. Blood erupted across the snow. He was already soaked in it. He could feel his gear heavy and sodden against his body and could smell the salt iron tang as if blood infused the air he was breathing. He neatly jumped the dead and darkened body and strode towards another of them, a brown-haired man with a tear in the sleeve of his red gear. Jace raised the sword in his right hand and the man flinched, surprising him. The Dark Shadow Hunters didn't seem to feel much fear, and they died without screaming. This one, though, had his face twisted with fear.
"Really, Andrew, there's no need to look like that. I'm not going to do anything to you," said a voice behind Jace, sharp and clear and familiar, and just a touch exasperated. "Unless you don't move out of the way."
The brown-haired Shadow Hunter darted hastily away from Jace, who turned, already knowing what he would see. Sebastian stood behind him. He had arrived seemingly out of nowhere, though that didn't surprise Jace. He knew Sebastian still possessed Valentine's ring, which allowed him to appear and disappear at will. He wore red gear, worked all through with gold runes, runes of protection and healing and good luck. Grey book runes, the kind his followers couldn't wear. The red made his pale hair look paler, his grin a white slice across his face, and his gaze scanned Jace from his head to his boots.
"My Jace," he said. "Been missing me?"
In a flash, Jace's swords were up, both tips hovering just over Sebastian's heart. He heard a murmur from the crowd around him. It seemed that both the Dark Shadow Hunters and their Nephilim counterparts had paused their fighting to watch what was going on.
"You can't actually think I missed you."
Sebastian raised his eyes slowly, his amused gaze meeting Jace's, eyes black like his father's. In their lightless depths, Jace saw himself, saw the apartment he had shared with Sebastian, the meals they had eaten together, jokes they had traded, battles they'd shared. He had subsumed himself in Sebastian, had given over his will entirely, and it had been pleasurable and easy, and down in the darkest depths of his treacherous heart, Jace knew that part of him wanted it again. It made him hate Sebastian even more.
"Well, I can't imagine why else you're here.
You know I can't be killed with a blade," Sebastian said. "The brat from the Los Angeles Institute must have told you that, at least."
"I could slice you apart," Jay said. "See if you can survive in tiddlywink-sized pieces. Or cut off your head. It might not kill you, but it would be fun watching you try to find it."
Sebastian was still smiling.
"I wouldn't try," he said, "if I were you."
Jace exhaled, his breath a white plume. "Don't let him stall you," his brain screamed. But the curse of it was that he knew Sebastian, knew him well enough that he couldn't trust that Sebastian was bluffing. Sebastian hated to bluff. He liked to have the advantage and know it.
"Why not?" Jace growled through clenched teeth. "My sister," said Sebastian. "You sent Clary off to make a portal? Not very clever separating yourselves. She's being held some distance from here by one of my lieutenants. Harm me and her throat will be cut."
There was a murmuring from the Nephilim behind him, but Jace couldn't listen.
Clary's name pounded in the blood in his veins, and the place where Lilith's rune had once connected him to Sebastian burned. They said it was better to know your enemy, but how did it help to know that your enemy's one weakness was your weakness too? The murmuring of the crowd rose to a roar as Jace began to lower his blades. Sebastian moved so quickly that Jace saw only a blur as the other boy whipped around and kicked out at Jace's wrist. The sword fell from his right hand's numb grasp, and he threw himself backward. But Sebastian was faster, drawing the Morgenstern blade and slashing out at Jace with a blow that Jace managed to evade only by twisting his body to the side. The tip of the sword sliced a shallow gash across his ribs. Now some of the blood on his gear was his own. He ducked as Sebastian slashed out at him again, and the sword whistled past his head. He heard Sebastian curse and came up with his own blade swinging. The two clashed together with the sound of ringing metal, and Sebastian grinned. "You can't win," he said. "I'm better than you, always have been. I might be the best." "Modest too," Jace said, and their sword slid apart with a grinding noise. He moved back, just enough to get range. "And you can't hurt me, not really, because of Clary," Sebastian went on, relentless. "Just like she couldn't hurt me because of you. Always the same dance, neither of you willing to make the sacrifice." He came at Jace with a side swing. Jace parried, though the force of Sebastian's blow sent a shock up his arm. "You'd think, with all your obsession with goodness, that one of you would be willing to give up the other for a greater cause. But no, love is essentially selfish, and so are both of you." "You don't know either of us," Jace gasped. He was breathing hard now, and knew he was fighting defensively, fending off Sebastian rather than attacking. The strength rune on his arm was burning, flaring up the last of its power. That was bad. "I know my sister," said Sebastian. "And not now, but soon enough, I'll know her every way you can know someone." He grinned again, feral. It was the same look he'd worn so long ago on a summer night outside the guard when he'd said, "Or maybe you're just angry because I kissed your sister, because she wanted me." Nausea rose up in Jace, nausea and rage, and he flung himself at Sebastian, forgetting for a moment the rules of swordplay, forgetting to keep the weight of his grip evenly distributed, forgetting balance and precision and everything but hate, and Sebastian's grin widened as he stepped out of the way of the attack and neatly kicked Jace's leg out from under him. He went down hard, his back colliding with the icy ground, knocking the breath out of him. He heard the whistle of the sword before he saw it, and rolled to the side as the Morgenstern blade slashed into the ground where he'd been the second before. The stars swung crazily overhead, black and silver, and then Sebastian was standing over him, more black and silver, and the sword came down again, and he rolled to the side, but he wasn't fast enough this time, and he felt it drive down into him. The agony was instant, clear, and clean as the blade slammed into his shoulder. It was like being electrified. Jace felt the pain through his entire body, his muscles contracting, his back arcing off the ground. Heat seared through him, as if his bones were being fused to charcoal. Flame gathered and coursed through his veins, up his spine. He saw Sebastian's eyes widen, and in their darkness he saw himself reflected, sprawled on the red-black ground, and his shoulder was burning. Flames licked up from the wound like blood. They sparked upward, and a single spark ran up along the Morgenstern blade, blazing into the hilt. Sebastian swore and jerked his hand back as if he had been stabbed. The sword clanged to the ground. He lifted his hand and stared at it, and even through his days of pain, Jace could see that there was a black mark, a burn across the palm of Sebastian's hand, in the shape of the grip of a sword. Jace began to struggle up onto his elbows, though the movement sent a wave of pain through his shoulder, so severe he thought he might pass out. His vision darkened. When it came back again, Sebastian was standing over him with a snarl, twisting his features, the Morgenstern sword back in his hand, and the two of them were surrounded by a ring of figures. Women gowned in white like Greek oracles, their eyes leaping orange flames. Their faces were tattooed with masks as delicate and winding as vines. They were beautiful and terrible. They were Iron Sisters. Each of them held a sword of Adamas, point down. They were silent, their mouths set in grim lines. Between two of them stood the silent brother whom Jace had seen earlier fighting on the plain, his wooden staff in hand.
"In 600 years we have not abandoned our citadel," said one of the sisters, a tall woman whose hair fell in black ropes to her waist. Her eyes blazed, twin furnaces in the darkness. "But the heavenly fire calls us and we come. Move away from Jace Light."